Penny Penny Arcade. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Paisley Penny Arcade. I am Mo, and come on in. Strange name for a offering, I know. Paisley Penny Arcade, what does that mean? Does it matter? This is a place where almost anything can be talked about, and I talk about metaphysical subjects more often than not, and I could change the name. At one time it made sense, but I've decided not to. I've made a lot of decisions, and some of them I just made one just a second ago using these dragon beads, which I have become unbelievably fond of and which I have realized are incredibly accurate. The dragon beads. I did an entire show last week on the dragon beads, how to make them and so on and so forth, and how to use them. And oh my goodness, they are, I can't even begin to tell you how accurate they are and how spot on, as we say in this vernacular, that's not even English. They're just incredibly accurate. I was going to I made a decision right before I came on about something rather important, and they gave an answer that was absolutely okay. That's the way I'll go, and I trust them so much that I made that decision, and that was that. I thought I had a big thing across my chest, but it's just wrinkles. I have wrinkles. Mostly in my clothing, I guess. I'm blessed. Today is April the 8th of 2026. Yes, it is 2026. And today just happens to be a very special day. If it comes up, I'll mention why. We'll see. I'm hoping that if my granddaughter's in the room, I don't know if she's in the room or not, but it's her birthday. So if she mentions that she's in the room, I'll wish her a happy birthday. And that would be nice, because she's awfully sweet and awfully precious to me. Renee, hello, welcome. And Pamela's in the room, welcome. What room? Well, it's a YouTube chat room. How do you do that? You go to YouTube at, that's the at sign, moabdelbaki.com, M-O-A-B-D-E-L-B-A-K-I. It's phonetic. When my father came to this country, he made it phonetic. When they first came, the passport people or visa people, whatever, spelled it with a hyphen, and he said, no, let's make it much easier. And they did it, I guess. An easier way. I don't know if it was easier or not, but that's the way it is. So, and he set the standard. That was back in the mid-century, the mid-century of the last millennia. So today, we're going to talk about something that fascinates me, and that's Tarot symbolism. So often, Tarot symbolism is kind of gobbledygook. And we have to take people's word for it through the Little White Book or through books that we buy that people write about Tarot. And I'm a Tarot guy. I've been working with Tarot for centuries, it seems. I got my first Tarot deck when I was 10 years old. And so that was almost 62 years ago. It'll be 62 years next month or so. I ordered it when I was 10 years old. I actually didn't get it till I was about 11. And that's because we moved and they had to forward it. But I got it. And it was really quite a remarkable journey. It's been quite a remarkable journey. And I have to admit, it wasn't easy. And Tarot isn't easy. I don't think it's not that it's not meant to be easy. It's just that you're taking a series of symbols. I still have my first Tarot deck and my second Tarot deck and every Tarot deck I've ever gotten. Every single one. Every deck I've ever used, I still have. I've never gotten rid of a deck. I don't see why I would. Do you? I don't. I gave a deck to my daughter. I told her that when she turned 12, that I would teach her Tarot if she wanted to learn it. She was about 9 when she said, I'd like to do this. And I said, nah, you're too young, because there are some ideas in Tarot that I don't think are real conducive to youngsters. So I made her wait, and when she turned 12, she had other things on her mind. So, many years ago, I gave her a deck that I had used for years and said, here, this is from me to you. And she greatly appreciated it. And I know she still has it, you know. So I should give a deck to my son. And these decks, I believe, they carry a lot of whatever it is that I have or that I do there. Yeah. No. Well, I don't know who that particular person is, but hello. I can't even pronounce it. Mahar Bawajibi. Yes. Hello. Yes, I am live, and I'm still alive, which is amazing, I guess. Thank you so much. It's nice to have you with me. Bless you, Pamela. I'll repeat that. She says, I am the Tarot Master. Well, thank you so much. I've been doing it a heck of a long time. Abraham backwards. Oh, I didn't catch that. Abraham. Yes, it is. It is Abraham backwards. Oh, that's very clever. Very clever indeed. Yes, indeed. Very good. Nice to have you with me. And yes, I am live today and glad to have you in the room. This discussion on Tarot symbolism, the reason I'm doing this is because every now and then I'll get a thing on my Facebook page, you know, it's like right there, and it was all about the pomegranate, which features rather prominently in the Rider-Waite deck in the Priestess card. I think it's in a few cards, and it talked about the meaning of the pomegranate and how it is, peace and, you know, all good stuff. And I thought, no, it isn't just all good stuff. It isn't just that. The pomegranate and the priestess can be many different things. And so when we simply accept other people's views of symbolism in a card, what we're doing is we're actually, we're taking their word for it, and we're not doing ourselves any favors, in my opinion. We're not allowing ourselves to be the best readers we can be. The pomegranate is a very complicated symbol, and it has been for a very, very long time. One of my favorite pieces of ancient Egyptian art is a silver pomegranate. And they had a lot of gold, the ancient Egyptians. Lots and lots and lots of gold. I mean, they put Donald Trump to shame with the amount of gold they had. You know, they loved to show it off. However, they did it tastefully. They knew how to use the stuff. You know what I mean? They really did know what they were doing. But they had this... Silver was extremely rare, and they had this silver pomegranate that is so beautifully rendered, and it had a great deal of meaning. And throughout the millennia, pomegranates have had an immense amount of meaning. But you have to think about it for a while, and one of the places that you can look for meaning is in mythology. And you're not doing yourself any favor if you don't think about the myths that go behind certain things, right? Now, and symbols are vital. When someone like Arthur Edward Waite puts pomegranates, has Pamela Coleman Smith draw pomegranates in the veil behind the priestess, he does so for a reason. Now, Waite was, he wasn't Crowley. There's nothing wrong with not being Crowley. Crowley had his problems, you know, one of which was addiction. But he was prescribed that by doctors. And he had a lot of issues, and I'm not going to get into that. I happen to be rather in awe of the man's imagination and his brilliance. And Waite was in that same era and part of the Golden Dawn, and he did create, with Coleman, Pamela Coleman Smith, the most popular tarot deck of all time. Yeah, what are you going to do? So, but we have to ask ourselves, I don't care what he meant by it, what does it mean to me? Well, me personally, I grew up eating pomegranates every now and then because Egyptians like pomegranates. They like them. And my parents would, you know, they did not have a graceful way of taking the pomegranates out, the seeds out of the pomegranates. So it was like, you know, sawed in half. And it was a lot of work. And pound, 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 usually with a big spoon, you know, or ladle. You just pound, 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 pound into a bowl, getting all of them out. And they're all, you know, all the seeds are kind of almost, as you see, you know, they're in little pot, little, you know, and they're hard to get out. And they're not easy to release. And you get them finally into a bowl, and you go to a lot of work. And I'll never forget the first time I tried one. My dad said, "You want to try one?" I said, "Yes." And I put it in my mouth, and it's hard, but it just pops. And it's so juicy and so incredibly sour. It's like, wow, this is so sour. It's so incredibly sour. And it's like, oh my God, that's... And the word for sour in Arabic is miz. Miz, M-I-Z-Z. That's... And I didn't say that. My dad said, miz? And I said, yeah, wow, that's, you know... And so what they do is they take sugar. Big spoonfuls of sugar. And they put it over it, you know, and then they mix it up. Yeah, I'm salivating. Yeah, it's like... They mix it up, and they let it sit for a while. And then they put it in the little bowls, and you have this incredibly soury, sweet... But it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. And that, to me, is a thought of what pomegranates mean. Pomegranates mean. So when I think of the priestess, I think of the amount of work that goes into whatever it is that veil is a partition for. An immense amount of work. And it's not always palatable. Now, I would never put all that sugar on it today. Today, I would eat it exactly as it is. Just sour as it is. Because I could not only take it, but I would love it, you see? But of course, it means much more than that, too. Much more than that. I mean, a child born, of a female, a girl born, has on the average of somewhere between 500,000 to 1,000,000 eggs within her pomegranate, the seeds. It's fertility. It's fecundity. It's the power of reproduction. And it's a very and the priestess is essentially we became to be connected to, well, virginity, but more than that, to the Virgin Mary. That's who they really kind of put her in with. Some people connect her to Isis, but who is really connected to pomegranate seeds? Do you remember the myth of Kore? Kore was the daughter of Demeter. Demeter, the earth goddess, right? Demeter and Zeus. Well, Zeus, he kind of got it on with everybody, as we politely say. It was just that sort of thing. And he had a child with Demeter, and she was beautiful, and just as beautiful, beautiful as could be. And her name was Kore, which means young girl. Kora, the name Kora, as a name, a lot of young girls have been named Kora, and that is the same name. It means young girl. And Kore is out one day, just kind of, bopping around, and boom, the earth opens up, and out from the underworld comes Hades. And Hades grabs Kore, and he takes her down into the underworld. And she's miserable, absolutely miserable. She says, I want to see my mom. And he says, okay, fine. Anyway, mom comes down and says, don't eat anything. Remember this myth? Don't eat a thing. And Kore says, okay, but I won't eat anything. But when she's down there, and Hades says, and Hades remembers one of the three ruling gods, three brothers. There's Poseidon. He rules the oceans, the seas, the waters. And then there's Zeus, and he rules the lands. Let's face it, he kind of gets the better of the deal, doesn't he? Don't you think he does okay? I think he does okay for himself. And he certainly has the more interesting job in many ways. And then there's Hades, who gets, I think, the short straw. He gets the underworld, which is kind of dark and dismal, and he gets everyone when they're done, and it's kind of dismal. No one eats down. It's a bummer most of the time. And he's grumpy. He's a grumpy guy, He's kind of a grumpy fellow. And so he's lonely. So he takes her down there, Kore, and he says, come on, eat a little something, even though you're forbidden to eat down there, right? And she says, no, my mom said not to. He says, look what I've got. Look what I've got. It's a little thing here. It's a little, look what I've got. Look what I've got. It's an Oscar Mayer wiener whistle. You can eat this. No, he didn't have this. It's a pomegranate seed. And he says, you know what these are like? They're really, really juicy. And they're really, really mizz. They're mizz. And she says, oh, I didn't know you knew Egyptian. He says, I know all languages, And the Greeks and the Egyptians very close. I had a great-grandfather, who would go to Egypt. He lived in Egypt. He lived in Alexandria. But he would cross the Mediterranean and go to Greece, in the rainy season, and hang out in Greece. He had bakshish, which was, actually bakshish is like a tip, but apparently he had a lot of money at one time. I never met him. I would love to have met him. Seems like he was a pretty good guy. And anyway, so the family did not have the money when I got there. I was 7 years old. They seemed okay, you know. But anyway, so she's down there, and he says, "Come on, come on, come on, come on, have this." So the myth varies depending upon whom you're speaking to, or whom is telling the story, or who, if it's a large group, is telling the story. And it can either be one, or representing a season, or two, three. Three, if it's months, which is usually, because in that part of the world, it's only cold or rainy for 3 months. But if you're talking about the Western world, they make it about us. It's all about us. 6 months of cold. That's all. It's all about us. We have 6 months of cold. And so mom says, "We did what?" Now you have to be down there with him for the cold parts of the year, and then you can come up and give us warmth. And so the whole thing is about, it's an explanation of the seasons. Why do they use pomegranate seed? Why? Because it's sensual. Because it's, because it represents a lot of different things. Because if you look at it, if let's say, okay, don't take this the wrong way, but let's say you're Christine Holmes' husband. Let's say you put one under your shirt. Okay, it's got that little thing on the end. Get what I'm saying? It looks kind of that kind of thing. I hope my granddaughter isn't in the room right now. She's gonna think her grandfather is a lunatic. Anyway, so so it's got that look to it because it's so it looks breast-like. In other words, it's nourishing. It's also voluptuous. It's also you see, it's about life, it's about growth, it's about nourishment, it's about that which makes the world go round. Yeah. So it's more than just a peace and goodness in life, and it's all just, it's not just, it's not that, it's much more than that. It is a symbol also of what's on the other side of that veil. Maybe it's the entrance to the underworld. Maybe it's something much more that we don't really know about. That veil, you don't want to lift that veil, do you? Not yet. It's meant to be something that is, and the priestess is complete. I mean, Isis, if you think about Isis, whoa, Isis, poof. So when you look at here, let me show you something. I got this off of my bookshelf. If you look in back of me, you can see on that second shelf from the top, there's a gap. This is the book that was in that gap. The gup is up here, man. The Dictionary of Symbols. This is a good book. I don't know if it's around anymore. I paid a goodly amount of money for this a long time ago, about 30 years ago. This is by Jean Chevalier and Alain Riobant. I'm not making fun. I took like 7-8 years of French. And I don't know much, but I can pronounce some words, like Jean Chevalier. And it's translated by John Buchanan Brown. I love this cover. I just love that cover. I don't know why. This is a phenomenal book. Now, I don't even know if it's still out there, but I bought this book at least 30 years ago. And it has things in it like the symbolism of old age. I'm just opening scales. That's a good one. The symbol of Saturn. I mean, it's just, you open it up and there are things. Hens. You're not going to find hens in too many tarot decks, but it might happen. You might see a chicken in a tarot deck. You never know what you're going to find in a tarot deck. And that's the key. So what we're talking about is taking a deck and making it your own. I'm an advocate. I've talked about this before. I've spoken about this subject more than once, and I absolutely believed in it. Now, the reason I believe in this, but you can find dictionaries of symbols in many, many places. And you want to find one that's good. But the reason I bring this up is because I have created my own deck. And you can do it too, if you so desire. I'm going to put this over here. I could go to the book, the entry on pomegranates, but I think it's going to have pretty much what we just spoke about, you see. When you create your own deck, you know... Oh, there's my fool card. There you see, my tarot card, right there. Me, at the age of 19, I was 19, streaking. It's a true story. It's absolutely the truth. That's what happened. I was streaking and having a very good time doing it. I drew myself thinner than I probably was, but so what? You know, I mean, does it have to be accurate? Do I have to? I wasn't huge, but I wasn't that thin. And I wasn't fast. Everyone else, they were like jets, and I was like a blimp. Just floating along, man. Boy, was it fun. And my dad was there, saw me. I didn't expect that, and neither did he. 19. Wow. It was a beautiful day, too. God almighty. So, I created this deck after studying the Aleister Crowley Thoth deck from 1975 till, I don't know, for 30 years, I guess. Pamela, thank you. It was available, and it was actually available. It may be available again if I can get that place to respond to me. It's called Make Playing Cards. I don't know what I have to do to get them to pay attention to me to sell my... I think my cards are actually... Oh, they're not for sale, because every now and then they go through and anyone like me who hasn't bought a deck, or no one's bought a deck in a long time, they purge the drawings. Probably because, you know, they're 300 DPI, or mine were 600 DPI, because I wanted them to be really crisp. And I can't get them to, I can't get back in. I screwed up my password. I wrote them, haven't heard back. I think it's probably one guy. I'm still trying to find another company. And if I do find another company, I will do it again. Just for those who... Because you don't make a lot of money doing this. And because of the price of stuff going up, they're about $50 a deck now. They didn't start out that way. They were 30-some bucks a deck. And I thought that was high, but I was willing to, you know, that's... And a lot of people bought them. I was very gratified. But now it's like, because the price of linen paper has gone up, and they're really good quality. But anyway, thank you for that. As soon as I figure out a way, I'll let you know. Because people keep saying they want them, and I'm that's very, you know, old man, and it's like, you like me, you know, anyway. But... when I chose, for example, I chose for my Three of Wands, and the three wands I chose were the legs of a stool. Why did I do that? A three-legged stool, virtue. And it's because to me it seemed obvious that one of the best things there is, one of the most virtuous things there is to do, is to milk a cow. You know, on a spring morning, because it's ruled by the sun in Aries, which is the first day of spring in the Western system. And I like that. I like that idea that that's a virtuous thing to do. That's a very virtuous thing to do, is to get up in the morning and you can see the cow's udder there, and there's a pail, and you sit down on a three-legged stool, which will never let you down unless it breaks. But otherwise, the three legs are always going to, you're going to be able to sit on it. It may be a little this way or that way, but you can always, not true on a four-legged thing, you know, it can always, you know, and so that's a symbol that I chose. We think about the symbols that we have, you know. Here's my death card. And some of you think, well, what the heck is that about? I have to find the right place here. That's from Norse mythology. I didn't pick the Grim Reaper or any of that stuff, because to me, this is a much more powerful image. That's a sprig of mistletoe being hurled by by Hodur, the blind god, and being aimed by Loki, as he is in the shape of an old woman. But of course, it's Loki, the god of mischief, and he's about to kill Baldur the Beautiful. This is one of the grandest symbolic mythologies I know of when it comes to talking about death, because it's an unavoidable moment. That's a myth that says that no matter who you are, no matter what you think, because it's the ultimate act of hubris when Freya says, we're going to have a contest to see who can kill Baldur the Beautiful, because everything has taken a vow that they will not harm him. And the rocks, they don't hit him, and nothing hits him, and it's just, and everyone is laughing and drunk and having a good time. But she forgot mistletoe, because mistletoe is not something of the vegetation. I mean, it doesn't live on the air, and it doesn't live on the ground. It's a parasite, you know. And by the way, I'm convinced, and I'm not the only one, I'm absolutely convinced that the Golden Fleece of Jason and the Argonaut fame, that Golden Fleece was actually mistletoe, because there is a type of mistletoe that in the fall turns golden. And it hangs in the trees. And certainement, when the Romans went got wandered off across the ocean and went off and met the Druids, who scared the crap out of everyone who met them, because they were so mystical and so weird and wonderful. And nothing like the modern Druids, I don't believe. Maybe they were, but I don't think so. Because for one thing, they were creepy, 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 creepy. Human sacrifice creepy. I mean, you don't want that. I don't want to talk about that too much. But they did things that, we don't like. And, the bog people. Have you heard of the bog people? If you have the nerve, look up bog people. And you're going to see things where you're going to go, I don't like that. But they were mystical, powerful people. And the Golden Fleece, mistletoe, had the power to heal. And this type of mistletoe supposedly had the power to heal. Grew in apple trees, grew in oak trees. And read the myth of the Golden Fleece again, and you'll read about the land of Colchis. Not Cochise, different. Colchis. And it's a remarkable tale. And about the magic of Medea, who married Jason, and he used magic to fool her, to enchant her. And what she did in vengeance is horrific. Absolutely horrific. And you learn right away, never, ever use magic against people in a way like that. You know? You learn quickly the rules of magic, and they're not what you should do, you know? Oh, but Pamela, don't worry. I'm going to try and get it going. I've been trying to figure out how to do this. See, they're in Hong Kong. And so it's not like you can easily communicate. I'll figure it out. But so when you use symbols and the symbol of the fleece, when you know what you're talking about, and when you know the people that you're talking about, makes a lot of sense. You know, when they talk about the mechanical bull, and when they talk about the dragon, you know, when you get an idea of what symbols are about, you know, symbols are powerful. Here, the Four of Discs. This is ruled by the sun in Capricorn, the first day of winter. And for this, I use the symbol of the Great Pyramid, power. Well, I've been there. I've been there. Last time I was there, I've only been there twice. One was when I was 7 for 6 months. And that was too young to appreciate. I loved the country after a while. In hindsight, let me put it that way. I was separated from my father, who had to stay here for political reasons. But the whole family went when I was 18. And I absolutely fell quite madly in love with the country. There's something about it. Well, first of all, it's really old. And the culture is still the culture. And this, the four discs, this is the Four of Discs. Those four discs are the points where the corners of the pyramids reside or are laid. And they have to be pretty powerful points. But there's something about those points. I mean, I walked around the Great Pyramid. It's 13 acres at the base. 13 acres. It took me, you know, quite a while to walk around. And, oh my God, the view was absolutely stunning. And the feeling, you stand at the base of it and you look up and you can't see the top. Well, it's because it's a, you know, 51 degrees, 55, you know, something like that. 51, so I don't used to know. I worked at a place called the Pyramid Shop when I was in college. And that was a hoot. Oh my God, was that. Oh, what a hoot that was. I had such fun. We'd sit around with copper pyramids on our heads. I mean, it was just a tremendous time. I can't even begin to tell you. Knew a great psychic. Her name was Midge Soderberg. And her son was, and is, still, Steven Soderbergh, the movie guy, you know, it's a movie. And he was a kid back then. He was about 9 years old. He had this big movie, you know, video camera, and he'd shove it in your face. And you just say, stop that. She'd say he's going to win an Oscar one day. She knew it. And she was right. She was phenomenal. Midge was a sweet lady, too. She was nuts, I thought. But I loved her. I mean, she was not nuts in that she was crazy. She was just eccentric and wild and a tremendous, tremendous lady to know. And I was like 21, maybe 22, and she liked me very much. And I liked her very much. It was a wonderful time. Yeah. She knew a lot about me, knew a lot about what I could do. And, she was a believer, and I'm still grateful for that. So the image, the symbol that you use, so if you got this deck and you say, okay, so what? That's a pyramid, those four discs. But you might want to say, why did he choose this? And so what? I was there. Maybe you haven't been. But you might say, well, what does it mean to me? You might say, what does it mean to me? And that's the key. You say, what does it mean to me? So you might pick up your book here. What does this book say about pyramids? So let's take a quick look, okay? Pheasant, pestle, pole, the Pope, Poseidon, rabbit, look under hair, quail, Prometheus, prostitution, purification, pyramid, The pyramids, the most famous tombs of the kings and queens of ancient Egypt, fall into different categories. So you read. Ah, in addition to the role in upward and convergence, I mean, there's a whole page here before I get to this. The pyramid was also the meeting place between two worlds. I like that. The one was the world of magic linked to funeral rites designed to preserve life indefinitely or to ensure the passing of an existence beyond time. The other. Huh. The logical world of geometry and architecture. Wow. It was inevitable that mystery mongers should gaze in wonder at this meeting, seeing it sometimes as the divine elucidation of geometry and as at others as magic justified by mathematics. Wow, what a sentence. So you think about that. The geometrical proportions of the Great Pyramids at Giza have opened the doors to other explanations that take us back to the symbolism of the alchemists. You see why I like this book? Makes you think. So this goes on to talk about some of those things, you know? And you think about that. You think about something that is both mathematical but spiritual at the same time. Now, it's obvious the Egyptians knew about pi. Although they didn't make many, they made mostly cakes. Sorry. Question. Did she make many predictions about you that came true? Yeah. She did. She told me some things. She told me that... She predicted that I would be a really big deal in the world of this stuff. Big deal. Big. And I kind of doubted that because I know what happens to big deals in this stuff. If I can put it that way. Do you know what I'm saying? I've known many people have become big deal. I had an opportunity to be a very, very big deal in this stuff. I had an opportunity to be the AOL psychic. But what they wanted from me was not who I am. So, I got... You know, I got the from the big man himself. I spoke to the big man himself. When you talk to a billionaire and he basically says, but I wouldn't do what he wanted because it's not who I am. So she thought she did see big things. Of course, I'm not dead yet. We'll see. I don't know that I want those things. So who knows? Those things bother me. You get lost in those things. Do you know what I mean? You can anyway. You don't have to. But anyway. She made a lot of predictions. She made so many that I'm not sure I remember them all. She did tell me that this would be what I did, which at the time seemed absolutely nuts. Like, no, I'm not going to do this. You're kidding me. I'm not going to do this, but I have done this. So, symbolism. So when we take something like this and we say, okay, so what does that mean in a reading? So you say, okay, pyramid. So I don't know what moment. I wrote a book about this deck. And I still have it on disk or something somewhere. And if you know, okay. So power. I use that pyramid as a symbol of power. Well, it certainly represents the power. You would think about that. Well, certainly he must have meant the power of a king to want that to be his tomb. You know, and there are people who say, well, it was never a tomb. It was never a tomb. I can assure you it was probably a tomb. It may have been something else. It may have been an irrigation ditch. You know, who knows? I mean, it could have been a bell. Who knows? It could have been a lot of things. But they were those two. Audra, hi, how are you? Hi, Mo just arrived home from a 12-day trip. 12 days. Unloading and feeding my two little girls. Well, bless you. And I will probably listen to the replay, but I am with you. Well, thank you. So happy to see you, and I'm happy to see you too, Audra. How sweet. How kind of you to check in. Thank you. So nice. So nice. So you might think, what sort of power did it take in 2500 BC, give or take, for King Khufu, who was allegedly responsible for the Great Pyramid, and there was his dad, who was Djoser, probably, and his grandfather, Sneferu, for these guys to build, you know, these pyramids, that the step pyramid, which is Djoser's, which is, I saw from the Giza Plateau way off in the distance, and made my heart just thump, 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 thump. And way off in the distance, I could see the bent pyramid. Oh my God. Oh my God. It was one of the most magnificent moments of my life to see these things. God, it was just tremendous. That was just before I went in between the paws of the Sphinx and almost got arrested for that, but luckily didn't. Didn't have to spend time in an Egyptian jail. But you think, what did it take for him to build this 500-foot tall monument? I mean, it's gigantic. When you stand up, I mean, I was stood up straight at the time, more or less, and I was almost 6'2", because I had better posture, and I hadn't had back surgery yet, and my mom's dad was 6'2", and I was almost that tall, or maybe I was that tall, and those blocks came up to here, and they're huge and weigh tons, 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 and you think, what type of power did it take for someone to build this? And you might think, oh my God, he must have had a whip. And no, it was the power of love. Why? Because he was king. And as king, he was responsible for the interface between the gods and mankind. The gods here, and mankind here. And if all was well, everything was good, and people ate, and they were happy, and they had children, and there was music, and there was love, and there was happiness. And so he was doing his job, and there were no slaves at that time. That didn't come until much later. Much, 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 much later. And for a reason that we won't talk about here. So you think about the symbolism and you say, wow, what is the greatest power? It's the power of love. It's the foundation of everything, even a pyramid. And that might be your thought process. So that when you see that, the sun in Capricorn, which is in this part of the world, where I live, one of the coldest times of the year. But on the winter solstice here, I think it was probably about 50 degrees, 55. What's happening? Well, we all know what's happening. Can't deny it. Can't. I was there in December. It was nice. Got cold at night on the desert. My grandmother lived in Giza, and which is just a few hop, skips, and jump from the Pyramid Plateau. And I can't explain to you what it felt like for me to be there, to get to that plateau. It was sacred and powerful. It's power. But it's a different sort of power. It's not the power that claims to wipe out a civilization, you know? I haven't been quite myself lately because of claims like that. That has made me a little bit crazy lately. My wife says I'm losing my sense of humor. Maybe I am. I think about this a lot, peace, and the importance of this symbol, which stands for nuclear disarmament. It's a semaphore, you know, ND. And maniacs claiming they're going to destroy a civilization. That's not power. Real power is love. And that's where my mind goes. So you look at a card like that four, right? And you might think when you get this in a reading, maybe that this is about what it took those guys. I mean, they had a full-time crew, but during the Nile flood, you had 3 months where there was nothing people could do. They couldn't farm. They couldn't do any of that. So they would all go and work on this pyramid. That's love. So think through symbols. Don't just take them for what a book says about them. Don't just take them for what they seem. Don't just take them for, you know. I mean, when you look at something like this, if you look very carefully in here, I don't know if it'll show or not, but if you look at this card, this is the Princess of Wands. Can you see her dancing in there? Dancing in the flame? Yeah? Well, you do a little research and maybe you find out that the jinn are created out of fire. Yeah? And maybe you didn't see her, but in the card, she's dancing. Maybe you've sat in front of a fireplace and seen her dancing in the fire. I think she's real. Maybe not. But if you've had a, you know, bourbon or two, or you've done something, you know, I mean, there it is. And you realize that there's more to things than meets the eye, that we have brilliant imaginations, or we wouldn't be doing these things, tarot and astrology and whatever it may be, and that we have the ability to go beyond a simple symbol. And it's up to us to, we owe it to those people that we read for, we really do, to delve deeper and to have richer meanings than a pomegranate, right? I wasn't making fun of Christy Noem's husband. I guess I was, but only from the standpoint that they have been such hypocrites. He has the right to follow his passion, no matter what it is. But they don't have a right to condemn others for following theirs. I'll say that. And that's why people have been so outspoken against all that. I'll say that. I just, you know, you can't condemn it and then do it. You know? I mean, that's just all there is to it. I am so sick and tired of people condemning other people for being human. I am so sick and tired of all the craziness. Can't we just love one another? Can't we just embrace people for who they are and stop hurting each other? I don't get it. I've known a lot of people in my life who have done some really, unique things that other people have not liked. And you know what? It has made the world very interesting. And that's the bottom line. So, take these symbols and use them. And think about them. And look them up in symbolic books, dictionaries, whatever the case may be. Don't be afraid to use your imagination and to come up with your own meanings for things. Forget the books that come with them. Forget the authors. Forget about what I say something means. Come up with your own thing that is unique to you because you're the reader. Okay? Yeah? Okay. All right. I think that's enough of me for this week. I've had enough of me for this week. I know most people probably have. Thank you. Thank you, Abraham Backwards. You're very kind. You're very kind. You're all very kind for being here. You're all very kind, trust me, for listening to this old man. If you know people you think might like this, please let them know. I'm just doing this because I like sharing. Okay? All right. That's it for this week. Have a wonderful week. Really. And be safe. And until next week, I wish you all peace. And I wish you all love. And I mean it. I love you all. And happy birthday, Alice. I love you so much. And I'll talk to you later. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Until next we meet, I'll be waiting for you right here in the Paisley Penny Arcade.